So we are holding on mem days, omud days, 6 lines from the top. We learned yesterday that Shmuel had said, Shmuel's version of our Mishnah, which mentioned that shutfim can't, that partners can't have a chazaka against each other, in the sense if one or the other of them is occupying the karka even for 3 years, it's not any proof that he actually bought it, because they may have arranged that that's how they're going to do. Each one is going to have it for a few years at a time. But Shmuel didn't have the word shutuf in his shutfim in his version of the Mishnah, and in fact Shmuel said that shutfim are able to establish a chazaka one against the other, as well as they're able to give edus one on the other, and they're able and if one of them is watching the thing on behalf of both of them, he's a shema sachar, which we're going to go through all those things in the Gemara. So the Gemara says, "Rami le Rav Abba le Rav Yehuda b'ma'arta de beir Rav Zakkai." Rav Abba pointed out to Rav Yehuda the following contradiction in the ma'arta, which means the cave of the household of the yeshiva of Rav Zakkai. Like, what are they doing in a cave? Zakkai Sabach actually changes it to b'ma'arta. They were in the wine press. Rabbi Yaakov Emden actually takes it as written, that it means they were in a cave, and he says, you see from it, the Gemara is pointing out how dedicated they were to learning Torah, even if they're having to hide out in a cave, because exodus or whatever, they're still involved in learning. Mind you, in the Sansino one, they translate it, meaning in the burial cave. We know from various places in chat, we'll have later on in Amos Efta, in the 6th Perek, we'll have that they would dig burial caves in the ground, so maybe that they were standing over there and talking about it. I don't know if that's really correct, especially because you're not really supposed to talk Divrei Torah near graves. I don't know. Anyway.
Was it during the Roman times?
The Pashas, Rav Abba, and Rav Yehuda are all in Bavel. But even in Bavel, occasionally there were Xeris. We learned in Bavel Matzia, for example, how Rabba was forced to escape from Pobedissa and wind up in the forests over there. So there were occasions. Because we learned over there that they mastered on him, that he's taking away people from paying taxes because so many people come to his yeshiva. Yeah, at the end of the
but that was just to get him.
Fine, but nevertheless, we do find, in some, for example, yesterday in the Gemara when we had, or 2 days ago when we had the case, we had the case over there with Rav Kahana getting his field flooded and then rebuilding the wall in the wrong place, where he goes to Rav Yehuda, and there's the whole case over there, and he says to Rav Yehuda, why are you passing in like Rav Shimon Elazar? I'll bring a letter from Eretz Yisrael showing that not. So they're going and write that there was a period of time during the period of the Amoraim there where there was a period of Xeris in Bavel, where on the other hand things were relatively peaceful in Eretz Yisrael, mainly because if you read up on Roman history, there was a period over there when there was like a new emperor every year or two, because each one kept on assassinating the previous one or getting killed or captured in battle or what have you. So they had no time for the Jews. They were too busy with their own power politics and assassinations and whatnot. So therefore the Jews in Eretz Yisrael were getting along reasonably well, whereas the Jews in Bavel were having tzaras.
What generation were the Chabarim?
That was early on. That's like the generation of Rav and Shmuel. The Gemara says
they were the worst.
So we're talking a little after that, but still, yeah. All right. Anyway, so Rav Abba says, "Rav Yehuda b'ma'arta de beir Rav Zakkai. Mi amar Shmuel shutuf yesh lechazaka." Did Shmuel really say this, that one partner can have a chazaka against the other one? Well, amar Shmuel shutuf ki yored b'rishustami. But we find a different din that Shmuel said, that if one shutuf is holding is using the entire field, all he's considered is ki yored b'rishus. He's considered that the other person gave him rishus. He's like an oris, in other words. My lav the member the shutuf ain lechazaka. Doesn't that imply that it means he doesn't have chazaka? He's just like an artist, and just like we learned in our Mishnah that the artist doesn't have chazaka, neither should the shutuf. The answer is like kasha, no, because it's not a contradiction. You could say there's a case when he's considered like an artist, and there could be a case where he could actually establish a chazaka. Hal de nochas was kula, hal de nochas the palga. Because one case can be talking about if he's taking care of the entire field. So you have a field that the two of them bought in partnership, and he's now been taking care of it for 3 years, at least, for Shnei Chazaka, for the whole thing, or versus the Hodenachas Lepalga, or where he's only taking care of half of it, the better half.
But what do we use?
So, well, which one is which? That's what we have to figure out. But in other words, when we say a half, what it means is, in other words, so if he's doing the whole thing, it's obvious. He's saying that my partner sold out his half to me. If he's only doing half of it, which is the better half, it means that he's saying, I claim that we divided it. This ended up being my portion. I have it for 3 years, so therefore I have a chazaka on this half. The other one says, no, we never divided it. We made a deal that you're going to have that portion for 3 years while I have the other portion, and then we'll switch after 3 years.
So an exchange, in other words.
Well, that's what the other partner is claiming, where the first partner wants to claim, no, we actually divided it. I have Shnei Chazaka over here, and that's it.
And then we're saying that Shmuel says yes or nay on this.
Well, that's what we're saying. One yes and one no. Which one is which? Amri lo lahai gisa v'amri lo lahai gisa. Some say in one direction, some say in the other. Namely, one way of looking at it is, when do we say a shutaf has chazaka? If he's taking over the entire field. Because usually what you're going to have is each one, they're either going to split it every year, they're going to split the payrus every year, or one is going to take half the karka and one is going to take the other half, and then the next year they'll switch off, let's say. You're not going to have, it's not usual necessarily to say that one of them is going to take it 3 years without the other one getting anything from it at all. Therefore, in that case, one way of looking at it is, in that case, it's more logical to say that if he has the entire field, it means he really has Shnei Chazaka. He has a valid claim that the other guy sold out his half to him. Whereas if he's only taking care of half the field, even if it was 3 years, okay, so you don't necessarily switch off every year. Maybe you switch off every 3 years. So then it wouldn't be a Chazaka. Or, or some say the other way around, Fakert. You could argue, if he's taking the whole field, maybe that makes it not a chazaka. Because sometimes they have the minhag that, yes, a person you have, one has the entire field for 3 years, and then the next one, or 4 years, or whatever it is, and the next one also has it for the next 3 or 4 years. Whereas according to that way of looking at it, Fakert, if he's taking over half the field, maybe that is a chazaka. Because why, if you really did
taking 1 to 3 years,
if it's the whole field, then you could argue there's no chazaka, because sometimes it happens. Sometimes one of them says, look, I have another field that I can get payrus from for the next couple of years, so you may as well have all the payrus for the next couple of years, for the next 3 years, let's say, and then I'll take it over and I'll have the next 3 years if we do, and we'll do it that way. On the other hand, if he only has half the field, that could be a valid chazaka, because then it more logically, it means they actually split it. So one way of looking at it is that a whole field, there's more reason to think that there's a chazaka, that he actually bought the whole field, versus half, maybe they're just switching back and forth. Or you could say the other way around. A whole field is something they're switching back and forth, and a half a field is more likely to be what they actually split.
There's no proof.
Yeah, so no, not there's no proof, but in other words, one of Shmuel's dinim would apply to one of them, the other would apply to the other one. We can't be clear which one is which,
right.
But that's how we could reconcile these two dinim of Shmuel. It comes out from the Rashbam, by the way, that basically it would depend on minhag amakom. It would depend on what the minhag of shukfim is in this local area.
So Shmuel is saying...
So in that case, Shmuel would be saying...
Sort of.
He would be saying, if the minhag amakom, for example, is that it's common that people do that, that one person takes everything for 3 years and then the next one takes it for the next 3 years, then we assume that is a shukfus rather than a splitting up of the partnership. And therefore chazaka, and vice versa. If the minhag is that no chazaka.
Right.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. Ravina says you don't have to answer it that way. No, you could answer both dinim of Shmuel are talking about if the one partner has taken over the whole field, and again he's claiming that his partner sold out to him, and therefore he actually owns the whole field. But like Kasha, there's still no contradiction. And when we say that Shmuel is saying in one case we actually accept his claim and we say he can have a valid chazaka, and in the other case we don't, we just consider him an artist, because like Kasha, hodi isba din chaluka, hodi lesba din chaluka, because it depends. Is the field large enough that it's worth dividing? We learned back in the first parak that every kind of property, whether karka or metalplin, has some minimum size below which one partner can't force the other one to split it, because it's not big enough for each one to have a practical use out of it. We said, yeah, so we said, for example, a chot, so each one has to have 4x4 amas, a field we said is based tishas cabin, or involve all the amount that it takes one day to plow, etc. So therefore, if there's din chaluka, if it's big enough that one of them could be split, each one of them could get a piece that's big enough to actually be worthwhile working, well then it's more logical to say it is big enough to split. Why would you not split it and just have the other one be taking over the whole field for 3 years? Very likely you sold it to him. Whereas hod lesba din chaluka. Whereas if there's no din chaluka, if it's too small, then there's no chazaka. Because since it's too small to split, if they wanted to dissolve the partnership, the only way practically to do it would be exactly like that. I'll take it for the next 3 years, let's say, and then after that you'll take it for the next 3 years or whatever, however much amount of time. And therefore, the fact that he's there for 3 years doesn't establish a chazaka, so because it may well be that
if it's too small, there would be an alternative partnership. And no chazaka.
Well, it wouldn't be an alternative partnership. It would be they dissolve the partnership, but because it's too small to split up.
An alternative ownership, I'm sorry.
Yeah, right. Alternate ownership, exactly. But then that wouldn't be a valid chazaka because we assume they probably didn't dissolve the partnership. Given that it's too small, very likely they're splitting off back and forth. While I'll use it for a couple of years, you'll use it for a couple of years because it's not large enough to be divided, right?
And therefore there's no chazaka.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
The same as what we were saying before.
No, not at all. Before we were saying that it's a difference of what the common minhag is over here, whether to split it or not to split it. Here we're saying it comes out according to Ravina. It doesn't matter what the local minhag amakim is. It matters just is the field big enough. There is actually, by the way, that Amam holds, you need two factors over here in order for it to be a chazaka. You need to be that isba din chaluka, that it is large enough to split, and you have to have that he actually took over the whole field. If you're only taking half of it, you couldn't even say he has a chazaka on that half a field. Rabbi Nachmanel disagrees with that. He says you only need the first factor. As long as yesh ba din chaluka, whatever part he's machzik in is the part that he can claim a chazaka on. Gufa. Okay, getting back to the main subject of discussion, Amar Shmuel, we said shutuf ki yoded b'rishustam. We quoted in this connection something that Shmuel said, that a shutuf is like a yoded b'rishust. He's like somebody who goes into a field and works it with the owner's permission, meaning basically an artist. So the question is, Ma'ika Mashmalan, in that case, what is Shmuel trying to tell us with that din? Shutuf sein lechazaka? Is he just trying to tell us the din that a shutuf has no chazaka against the other one? Let him say straight out. What is he using this wording? The answer is Amar of Nachman, Amar Rav Baruah. Leimah should note of a shvach amagil ksefayim. No, but Shmuel also wants to teach us another din. Besides the fact, it's true that when we consider him kiyored v'rishus, then he doesn't have chazaka in the cases that we established before. But there's another point in which he's like an artist, namely like this. We learned in Bava Metzia that you have a situation where somebody goes and sort of volunteers as an artist without the owner's consent. He goes and starts taking care of a field. So we said over there, we had a machlokas Rav and Shmuel. Rav says that you figure out what's the lesser amount, his expenses or the improvement to the karka, and he gets the lesser of those two. Yodei ala tachtona. Shmuel says what you do is, Shmuel says you consider it, how much would a person be willing to spend for an artist on this? And then we made a further distinction over there. We talked about, actually, the Gemara specifically in Bava Metzia, in the Eis Peres. We talked about over there also specifically the case is actually, he goes and plants trees in the field. So the distinction we made is like this, we said over there.
The
Yared Lushalai Bershom. So we said he went and planted trees. So again, Rav is saying that Yod El Hasayna always, Shmuel said you figure out how much would a person be willing to pay. Now, Rav Papa points out over there that they're not actually arguing. It depends. Is this a field that would normally have trees planted in it? Is it a field that has soil of the quality that would be good for planting trees? If it is, in other words, if it's a field that is normally meant for planting trees, then fine. Then we can go like Shmuel says. We estimate how much a person would be willing to pay. After all, it's meant for planting trees. Sooner or later, presumably, he would have hired an artist to plant trees for him, or shafla, as we learned before, whatever, to plant trees for him. Therefore, we figure out how much would he pay such a person, and that's how much he pays, that's how much we ask him to pay this guy. As opposed to, if it was a place, it's a place which is not even usually, does not usually even have trees planted in it, because it's not worth anything. You get something out of the trees. Then we use Rav's din, where we say we figure out what was smaller, his expenses, or the improvement in value of the karka, and he gets the lesser of those.
What, planting trees, then we do what?
If it's the kind of place where trees would normally be planted, then we go like Shmuel. That we figure out how much an artist would be paid for this kind of work, and we pay him that. If it's a place that's not meant for planting trees, but this is all if he went in Shaloi Bereshus. What Shmuel is saying over here is, we consider this shutuf, even if he planted trees, Even if it's shaloi b'rishus, even if he didn't specifically talk it over with his partner, and even if it's a field she'ena asuya lita, it's a field that's not usually good for planting trees, nevertheless, we say it's considered kiyored b'rishus, and he's entitled to collect like an artist. That's Shmuel's point. And there's another point as well, which is, so first of all, we say that regardless whether the field is meant for planting trees or not, we consider him like an artist, because since he's a shudder, automatically he's considered to have rishus. Number two, what Rav Nachman is explaining is Shmuel also means that he also gets to collect from Shvach HaMagil Ksefayim. Shvach HaMagil Ksefayim, we had this concept before in Bava Metzia and First Perek and a couple of other places. There's a bunch of different explanations of what it means. Rashbam says that it means, for example, peiros that are ready to be harvested, hamagil ksefayim, then literally would mean that's ready to be picked up on the shoulders. In other words, it's still attached to the ground, sure, but it's ready to be harvested and taken. So therefore, the din would be that he'd be entitled to get his whole half of that, even of that shvach hamagil ksefayim, plus another half as an artist. So he'd end up getting 3/4 of it.
What? Wait a second. Oh, 3/4.
Yeah.
Okay. Why half and half, 3/4?
Half because he's a partner, and another half because he's an artist on the other guy's part. So he gets
half of the other. Okay, so yeah. Since he's a partner, he gets half already.
And since he's an artist,
even
shalom b'rishus. Yes. Yeah. So we still give him shvach hamagil ksefayim.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that's Rashbam explains that's what shvach hamagil ksefayim means. That it means fruit that's already ready to produce that's already ready to be harvested.
Right.
Rashi elsewhere talks about that maybe it means it's not necessarily ready to be harvested, but almost ready. Tosfos over here talks about a number of other possibilities, including one of them, Rabbeinu Tam learns in Tosfos, that shvach hamagil ksefayim means the shvach that comes out of his working with his shoulders. In other words, shvach that he put in effort for, as opposed to shvach habama elav, as opposed to improvement that came on its own. Let's say, for example, there was a good dust storm that blew in some fertile topsoil or whatever, you know.
So that would mean he would get hourly amount and not half of half.
No, not necessarily an hourly amount, but the point is that he would be we look at the amount of effort that he put into it, and he's entitled. So in other words, in that part, whatever shvach, according to that explanation, whatever shvach was brought about by his effort, he's entitled to the regular artist's percentage. As opposed to shvach habam me'elav, he's not going to be entitled to the artist's percentage. Then he's just entitled, he's a shutter. He gets half and half, as usual.
Now, there's nowhere where, remember when someone planted a tree, and who was it that said, I don't even want a tree there, but then he built a fence around it. So then he had to pay for the whole tree.
I don't remember. I mean, it's vaguely similar to what we had at the beginning of the Masechta about the case where one person puts up a fence and the other person ends up benefiting from it. Yeah.
That was in the eighth parak of Sabbath.
I don't remember, but okay.
Where someone planted a tree, and I think it was in another Amora, said went to Basin and said, I didn't even want that tree on my field. So then he didn't have to pay him anything until he built the fence around it, and they figured out.
It probably was in the same story. I don't remember. But okay.
Yeah.
All right.
But here that wouldn't happen. He would have to pay him anyway.
So yeah, because he's a shutuf. He's a very, very shutuf. That's the point. So that's the point. So when Shmuel says that a shutuf is kiyored b'rishus, it means there's three consequences of it. Number one, it means there's ein lechazaka in the cases that we talked about. Number two, it means that he will be entitled to an artist's percentage of the shvach, regardless whether he went in b'rishus or not, because automatically he's considered to have b'rishus. And number three, he will be entitled to shvach hamagil ksefayim, according to the various definitions of what that means.
Generous.
So therefore, that's what Shmuel is saying in those few words, shutuf kiyored b'rishus, I mean, it means those three things. Now let's go.
That's
a lot. Yeah. Okay. Moving along. Idin Zelazesh. Shmuel also said that one partner can give edus for the other.
That was a good one.
Question is, am I? Why should they be able to be giving edus? And negei b'davar. Because let's say, for example, so as long as they have this field in partnership, if somebody were to come in ma'arer, let's say, and establish that, let's say, one third of the field belongs to him, that third is going to be taken away. Each of them is going to get a smaller chunk now if they eventually divide it. That, mind you, some of the Poshim point out, it's even more than Nogin Beidusen, since he's literally being made a lachma. Yeah, it's his own. Okay. The answer is Hochav Ma'eskin, and yes, but you know what we're talking about over here? Because of the Dinu Dvarim Eimli Al Sadazu. Suppose that the one who wants to give Eidos, before he goes and gives Eidos, he writes out a document that says, I have no Dinu Dvarim on this field. Meaning, in other words, I'm renouncing any ownership of I'm renouncing any ownership of this field to you. Well, then he's not in a Geva Dover anymore.
Why would he do that?
Because that's what we're going to have to figure out. We're going to have to figure out whether there is any possibility that maybe, after all, he's doing it for ulterior motives, because maybe he is in a Geva Eidos after all. That's what we have to figure out.
The guy's going to give it back to him.
Yeah, that's what we'll see. Wait.
He automatically...
The first
which
thing,
he's right.
Yes, however, the problem with that is the chikos of loy my havi. So what if he writes out such a thing? What good is that? V'hatanya, we learn in a braisa, ha'im l'chaveri dinu dvarim ein li'al sadazu. If one person says to the other, I have no dinu dvarim on this field, I have, in other words, no legal claims or anything on this field, the ein li'esek bar, I have no business with it, the yodai misalokas himena, and my hands are withdrawn from it, loy amaklum. What he said doesn't count for anything. Now, why is that? The Rashbam says the reason is because he has a portion in the field. If he's saying I intend not to have a portion in it, that's not a lashon of matana. That's like a lashon of tefillah. I wish I didn't have any portion in this field. I would love to get rid of it, but it's not saying I actually renounce it. You wanna do that? You have to actually sell it or gift it or whatever to the guy. Not make declarations like that. Then the Rashbam brings another explanation, which he says that the reason is because he's saying in the future, because he's not saying in the future tense, I will not have. He's saying in the present tense, I don't have. But that's not true. He does have. But the Rashbam says that's not it, because there's no real difference whether he says it. There's no real difference whether he says it in present or future tense. No, the reason is just because him saying that is just a wish. It's a wish rather than a declaration of fact. Tosfos, by the way, points out it's different with an eved. If you write, we learned in Gittin that if you write a lashon on an eved ein li esek bach, that is a valid form of shichur. The difference is that an eved is a human being. He has a daft of his own. Once you have no esek with him, well, he has no master. He automatically goes free. A field has no daft of its own. So therefore, saying ein li esek bach doesn't change the status. Yeah. Okay. So the answer is. And by the way, this is some of the Rishonim say, as far as that question, why the Gemara sorted off the question, why we say Noyin Bei Dusenhein, why don't we say Einod Amed Al Atzmai, that because the Gemara already anticipated this answer, that he's going to be writing, that he's going to be saying Dinu Dvarim Einli Al Sadazu. So fine, you can argue he's not Meid Al Atzmai, but you can still argue, as we're going to see, that he can still be a Negev Adava.
He's not made alatzmai because
he's renouncing his ownership. Let's say we're going to say now that if he does a kinyan, then that's a valid renunciation
of
ownership.
Course.
Fine, but we can still find how he's going to be a negev adover.
Shiva is a kinyan in this case.
No. We're talking about if he actually makes a kinyan along with that declaration. The point is, in other words, negev adover is a very complex thing. The Rambam, in fact, writes that a dayan has to have a great deal of common sense, what we call the finfka shulchan aruch, you know, to figure out and be able to understand these kinds of things and figure out how, you know, in this odd situation, you know, if this, this, and this, then the guy could potentially be negeya be'edus. Yeah, and he has to make sure that there's no such thing before allowing the guy to be made. I saw, by the way, a vote about that from Sam Sofer. He says, we always talk about the idea that when we say Krishna, we're supposed to say we have Kabbalah El Malchus Shemaim, it's also supposed to be done with Mesiras Nefesh. Now, where do we see in the words of Shema that there's anything about Mesiras Nefesh? In V'ahavta, fine, we're called Nafshah Chol Hamidah, but that's V'ahavta as Hashem Elokecha. That's as far as the mitzvah of Avas Hashem. That's not as far as the mitzvah of accepting the yoke of Hashem's kingship. That's not the same thing. No, those are different mitzvahs. He says like this, based on our Gemara over here, we're saying that you have to make sure that in no possible way are you negev eidus. When we say Shema, we're eidim. That's why they have the large ayin and the large dalet, spelling out the word eid. If we're negev eidus at all, meaning, in other words, if we're serving Hashem, if we're accepting Hashem's kingship for any ulterior motive, such as that we expect to get a reward, lo lost in love, then that's no good. So we have to renounce that. We're serving Hashem purely Lishma for no other reason than Chvil no dichalein. I only want you, like it says at the end of Hayom Yom that the Alter Rebbe used to say. Not even for Gan Eden, not for Olam Haba, not for Olam Asoyonim, Tachsonim, whatever. You have to be completely disinterested.
Becholalcha actually could mean with all your heart, meaning the person says Gashma, and Becholalcha for Hashem.
Okay, But that's already in Viahafka. That's a separate thing. I'm talking about Inshmat. All right.
Where is that from, Sofer? Is it on this stuff?
I don't think so. No, I don't remember what their context is, but I saw it while I was looking. Okay. Anyway. All right. So he makes a declaration. The declaration doesn't help anything. He's still still a part owner of the field. Back to the question: is Negebedover? The answer is Hacha Ma'askin Konumiyada. Fine, but we're talking about besides that declaration, he also made a kinyan. He made a kinyan. They made a kinyan suder. Well, a kinyan suder makes it official. This statement
so
of his is now
Pashut, isn't it?
Because he's still Negebedover.
Hold on. He just sold it to the other partner.
Yeah.
And
then he wants to come and give Eidos that. Remember, what's the situation over here is you have some other third party wants to claim that this field or part of it belongs to him. Now he, having renounced ownership of it and done a kinyan, wants to be able to come to Beis Din and give Eidos on that. The problem with that is it's not so simple. So what if they made a kinyan?
Right.
But by giving Eidos, he still is Negebedover.
Right.
Because he would still rather that the whole field remains with his partner. Why? Because let's say, for example,
will come back to
no,
him and say, oh, you owe me money.
Okay, yeah, not that guy, but let's say somebody else. Let's say, for example, again, let's just give the people names so we can keep them straight.
Okay.
You started out with Reuven and Shimon. They were the two partners. Reuven and Shimon, or Shimon and Levi, Achim, okay, never mind. Reuven and Shimon are the partners, fine.
Just keep the Reuven.
You're Reuven and Shimon are the partners, fine. Levi is coming to be my honor. So Reuven figures, okay, I'll renounce my ownership, I'll do a kinyan, etc., and therefore it'll now belong completely to Shimon, and therefore I should be able to come and give Eidos that in fact it completely belongs to Shimon, and Levi has no business with it. The problem is like this. Now, suppose that Reuven, again, remember, this partner who renounced his part of the partnership. Now, though, he previously owed money to Yehuda. Now, if the field belonged to him, half of it belonged to Reuven in the first place, then it's under Shibud. Yehuda will be able to come and take it to collect on his debt from Reuven. The advantage that Reuven will have from that is that he won't be people won't consider him loyver rosh of lo yishalim. As the pasuk says, if a person borrows money and doesn't pay back, he's considered a rasha. He doesn't want people to think of him as a rasha who doesn't pay off his debt.
Because he has a shibud.
Because, in other words, think of it this way: if the property didn't really belong to Reuven and Shimon in the first place, if it really did belong to Levi, then there was no shibud on it. Yehuda is not going to be able to collect from that. If Reuven has no other assets to collect from, it means Yehuda is not going to be able to collect, and people are going to call Reuven a loyver rosh of a loy shalom. Look at that. Look at this rosh. Reuven, he borrowed money from Yehuda, and he's not paying him back, and he's not arranging for anything to make sure he gets paid back. So Reuven is a negebedover. Even though he owns nothing of the field now, the fact that at one time he owned it makes it possible for Yehuda to collect it, and therefore that he won't be a loyver rosh of a loy shalom.
So
now,
Yehuda would be able to collect it from his partner,
from his former partner.
And so, therefore, he cheated his former partner.
Well, there's that. Fine, but that's a different issue. But the main point is that's not the issue. I mean, fine, you know, the same thing when.
I mean, this is counter to what my intuition would have told me. The reason why he wanted to do it. I would have said that, let's say, Levi did have a claim on the property, and he sells it to Shimon, and then Levy comes and says, oh, look, I want to get my $100 back. It's on the property. He says, oh, no, it's on Shimon. And then he'd take it from the property and he'd take it out of Shimon. And then Shimon would come after him for the $100.
No, because we're not talking about, again, made a kinyan over here, we're going to, you know, at least for purposes of this discussion, we're not assuming that he's going to make a knunia afterwards. We're not assuming that he and Shimon are going to go and be in cahoots and take it back afterwards. No, but the problem is, even if we don't have any reason to worry about knunia, the fact is Reuven has a vested interest in making sure the property is considered to have at one time been his. Now, the Meiri points out, I mean, so what are you going to have? The guy's going to go give false Eidos, which is an Isur Deraisa, in order to avoid Lover Rosh Avalei Shalem. So he says, but he says, folks, you know, this is one of those kinds of things, like, you know, like the famous thing Rabbi Yechon Ben Zakkai says to his Talmidim, you know, halavai that you have murder Shemayim like you have murder Basel Adam, you know, because you're more afraid of public opinion. So yeah, he's going to be more afraid of public opinion that's going to call him Lover Rosh Avalei Shalem rather than of the Eidos who says, who says, Loisana Bereachai Shocker. Okay, anyway.
So he's not afraid that his partner just bought a
What?
He doesn't care so much. That his partner just bought
it. No, but his partner didn't buy it. Hold on. His partner didn't buy nothing. He renounced it to him. The partner, Shimon, didn't have to pay a dime for it.
Oh.
He renounced it. They made a Kenyan soda. Then Shimon didn't pay nothing for it. Reuven just renounced ownership of it in order to be able to serve as an aide. But the problem is that Shimon didn't spend any extra money on it. But nevertheless, the Reuven still has a vested interest.
Okay, so Levi may or may not have real.
But that's the point. Reuven has a vested interest over here in testifying against Levi. So how can we accept his aid?
But it doesn't make any.
No, not because he owed Levi. He owed Yehuda. But he has an interest in saying that Levi has no business over here.
Okay,
in other words, the property belonged to me and Shimon, and the property belonged at the time when I borrowed money from Yehuda. Half of it belonged to me, and therefore Shibud was created, and you, Yehuda, are going to be entitled to collect from that.
Okay, so you and I own a farm, and it's worth $200. So I'm going to give you my $100 worth of the farm because there's Levi out there who we don't even know that's making some kind of claim on it. And I'm going to give up $100 just to help you out.
And if it's going to be,
but then you're going
to
give it back.
It's going to be taken away. It's going
to
be taken away for the chayv anyway. No, so it's going to be taken away for the chayv anyway. So I have nothing to lose. But nevertheless, yeah. And we see that this is a consideration, the fact that Ma'amid B'Pnei Baal Chayv is a real consideration, because Rovin B'Shmuel said in the name of Shmuel, if somebody sells a field to somebody else, he says, you have a machloek as we're showing him, by the way, we know when it comes to a loan, the halacha is achrayus to a soifahu. When it comes to a sale of a field, some machloek that's Rishonim, is it automatically the same kind of thing? Achrayus is assumed unless he says explicitly otherwise, or is it no? It has to be explicitly written. Whatever, there's some machloek that's Rishonim. Be that as it may, so in this case, there's no achrayus, whether tacitly or explicitly, as the case may be. So if he sells it shaloi b'achrayus, and the Rashbam adds, how much more so if he sells it with achrayus? Ain made loyalah, he cannot be made on the ownership of that field, for precisely that reason, because he has an interest in showing, in saying, in coming to Beis Din and giving Eidos that this field at one time belonged to him. So if he sold it to Achrayus, of course he's going to give the Eidos. If the field gets taken away by Levi, then he's going to have to reimburse the one he sold it to. But even if he sold it to Shaloi Achrayus, there isn't that consideration. There's still the consideration of Yehuda coming and taking it to pay off Reuven's loan, and therefore Reuven not being loyal to him. In benefit that he's not loyver rosha, that his baal chayv Yehuda has the ability to collect from someplace, and therefore people won't call him a loyver rosha v'lo yishalem.
He doesn't want his name in the city.
He really is because he's having someone else.
No, but that's the point. If he were to come to Beis Din, if we were to allow him to come to Beis Din and testify that this property does not belong to Levi, that it belongs to Shimon, whom he sold it to, then the problem is that he's negei b'dover. And we can't allow such aegis. So we see that's a real issue. The answer is Hoch, Maiskin is Kabbalah Alay Achrayus. Yes, but you know what you're talking about over here. When this Shutef, when Reuven renounced his part to Shimon, what he did is he accepted on himself Achrayus. So we have that. On the field, but if this field gets taken away from you, Shimon, then I will reimburse you. However, we have to consider Achrayus Deman. What kind of Achrayus are we talking about? Remember that there's two kinds of Achrayus. There can be the Achrayus if Levi takes it away. In other words, if Levi's claim proves to be true, that Levi was the original owner of this property and Reuven and Shimon were holding on to it illegally, or there can be achrayus from Yehuda. Fine, you, Reuven and Shimon own this field validly, but I'm the baal chayv of Reuven and I'm going to take it in payment of that. What kind of achrayus is Reuven accepting on himself that we say that makes his eidos be a disinterested eidos and he can be made? Inema achrayus to Alma. Are you talking about that he's taking achrayus that if Levi takes it away, then he'll reimburse him? Koshikin the Nichalei. Well, of course, then he has an even more vested interest in testifying against Levi. He'd rather that Levi doesn't take it away, because otherwise, if Levi takes it, then that achrayus clause is triggered, and he's on the hook for all that money. Ela achrayus to Asalem Hamasi. No, we have to answer that what Reuven is accepting is achrayus that came because of him, namely Yehuda. Namely, that Yehuda, who is his baal chayv, that he's saying, he's saying to Shimon, I'm renouncing the field to you, my portion of the field to you, and we're making a kinyan. If Yehuda comes and takes away this field from you in payment of my chayv, I will reimburse you. Now he's not in a gay of Eidus, because what happens if one way or the other, if Yehuda ends up taking, either way, if Yehuda takes the field, then he's anyway on the hook to pay Shimon the same amount. And if Yehuda doesn't end up taking it, because Levi ends up taking it, because Levi ends up proving it belonged to him in the first place, he's still going to be on the hook to pay Yehuda. So one way or the other, he's not gaining anything. There's no gain of that. He's not going to be Levi Rosh of Alo Yishalem, and therefore we can accept the Eidus against Levi.
Then
he would be in the Gave Eidus. That's the point. Yeah, that's the point.
No, but that's assuming that he has enough money to pay it, because if he doesn't have enough money to pay any outstanding debt,
still Levi Rosh.
Then
he's going to be a Levi Rosh regardless. Regardless whether Yehuda takes the field or Yehuda doesn't take the field because Levi previously took it, either way, he's going to be on the hook for the same amount of money. Yeah.
So he's
not Negeva Dover. Yeah. Okay. However, we still have to ask v'chimisalik nafshe minei minisalik. Okay, but nevertheless, even in general, if a partner goes and withdraws from a partnership like that, and even if they make a kinyan, is it a valid siluk that we can accept him as an aid? The Rashbam explains that the question is still as far as Negev Eidus. A number of other Rishonim take a view that the Gemara's question over here is rather something else. There's a concept that we'll learn about it in Sanhedrin, Bez Hashem, that an aid has to be b'kashrusa mitchilosev ad sofa. He has to be valid as an aid from when he saw the thing happen until he gives the Eidus. Now, in this case, he's coming to give Eidus, that the field doesn't belong to Levi or whatever. At the time, he was a partner. He was Negev Eidus. How can we accept his Eidus now, even if finally he was Masalik himself? But so Tosfos brings up that point.
Not from beginning to the end.
Yeah, exactly. Tosfos brings up that point. Tosfos says that not really, because that's only the kind of thing where we say you have to be Tchilos of a slave of a kashrus. Tosfos says, is where it's a psul on him himself. Here it's not a psul that really is him himself. Here it's just a monetary psul. So that's how Tosfos learns, that when we say that he has to be Tchilos of a slave of a kashrus, it would mean, for example, he can't have been a Baal Averus at the time he saw the Eidus, and then later on have done Shuva by the time he comes to give the Eidus in Beis Din. But if it's a psul, mitzad interest, mitzad moment, then Tosfos says that wouldn't be such a problem. Different other Rishonim talk about different other ideas about it, including one interesting one, which I think comes from the Mordechai, that effectively what it is we don't consider him to be even a potential aid until he withdraws from the shutfus. Therefore, at the time that he withdraws, that's when he becomes an aid. Very well. Then he's chilos of a sefer b'kashrus. Okay. Anyway, so the question. Okay, so again, according to some Rishonim, that's the question of the Gemara. According to the Rashbam, the question is still, even if it was Masalik himself, isn't he still a Negev Dover? As we shall see. V'hatanya, because, like we learn in a Braisa, Bnei Ir Shenignav Sefer Torah Shalahan, we see in a Braisa that if you have people of a city where their Sefer Torah was stolen, Ein donin b'dayonei oser ir. The dayonim from that city cannot judge the case because they're interested parties, because they need the Sefer Torah and Shul to be Yotze Kriya. Ein mevi'in raya mancha oser ir, and he can't bring any proof from anybody in that city that it's that Sefer Torah or whatever. Again, same thing. They're possible as Edim because they're negei b'davar. Now, v'im issa, if you're going to tell me that you're able to be misalik yourself, like we talked about Reuven renouncing to Shimon, then why? What's the problem?
Right.
Why don't two of them withdraw and say, we have no business with this Sefer Torah anymore? Let them write, Dinu Dvorim Emi Al Sefer Torah Zu, make a kinyan, and then that's it. They can now be aegis. By the way, when we say over here, L'salko Beit Shrei Nafshi V'lidainu, two, and then they should judge. A lot of the Rishonim talk about what is that? Two people don't judge, you need three to judge. So they talk about a lot of different possibilities. Maybe we mean two people will go as Edim,
and then
they can, maybe in other words, so fine, a Beis Din, you can find any Beis Din, we'll take the case, but you need Edim from the city,
right.
So therefore you'll have two people. There's a lot of other explanations, including one interesting one, Shmuel himself holds at the beginning of Sanhedrin that two people can be Dayanim. Two people together can be Dayanim. You don't necessarily need priests. According to Shmuel, two people in the beginning. They can be a Beis Din. Even though usually we talk about three as the minimum for a Beis Din, at the beginning of Sanhedrin, Shmuel himself says that two is enough. So therefore, good. So then Shmuel can be saying over here according to Shmuel. We'll get to it in Sanhedrin as the Shem. Okay. So anyway, so you see on the face of it that even if you're Masalik yourself, it doesn't completely work.
So that's just the
answer is shiny Sefer Torah, the Lashmiya Kari. It's different when it comes to a Sefer Torah. A Sefer Torah is meant to, you have to hear it in Shul. So you can't be misalik yourself. No matter what, you're always going to be in shul there. You're going to have hana from them reading that Sefer Torah. You're yotzei the kriya. Now, mitzvah lav lahanis nitnu, it's true, but nevertheless, you still do have a certain intangible hana from it, enough to possible you from edus. The only way to withdraw from that Sefer Torah would be to move out of town. And they're not moving out of town, so therefore, then even whatever they do to be misalik themselves, they're still coming to shul. Mind you, by the way, the Rishonim talk about, and this is brought in Shulchan Aruch, this is only if there's only one Sefer Torah in town. If there are two Sefer Torah in town, then already, yes, they can withdraw. At any time we're in shul, don't take out that particular Sefer Torah. We're withdrawing from any ownership of it. Any hana or whatever. That's what we're saying. They can't be Adim and still be able to listen to the Kriya. That's the point. So then that would work if there's two Sefer Torah. Okay.
They'd have to roll.
Okay. All right. So you can't prove from that one way or to the other as far as a field of shukr. Okay. Tashma, come, let's prove from another Braisa. Braisa says, "I'm a tnu mana levnei iri." If a person says, a shchiv merah, let's say. Says, give a money to the people of my city, and we know give it a shchiv merah k'tzuvim v'chemesurin. What he says is considered as if it's signed and sealed and delivered, as we'll learn later on in our Masechta, and as we've talked many times before. So he says, give a money to the people of my city. Now, let's say, for example, there's objections. His heirs come and say he didn't really say that or whatever. So you need a din torah. Ain donin b'dayonai oser ir. Again, the case can't be heard by dayonim from that city because they have an interest. Yeah, they're negebedover. But in mevi'in raya mancha oser, and you can't bring any proof from anybody in the city. So before we answer, So again, the question is amai. Why is that? Why should we say if we're saying that siluk works? Same thing. Let two people withdraw from any interest in that mana that he's saying that he's going to give that he's going to give. Remember, he had said give a mana to the people of the city. So let two people withdraw from their interest in that mana. Yeah, and then they'll be able to give edus. And then the case can be judged. The answer is Hachanami the Sefer Torah. We could answer that here also. We're talking about when he said. Give a mana to the people of my city, what he meant is give a mana that will be used for the public needs of the city. It can be a Sefer Torah. Then it's the same as the previous Braisa. Now, according to Rashbam, the way the Maharam explains the Rashbam, it would be only in the case of a Sefer Torah would this be true, because, again, with a Sefer Torah, on the one hand, you have Hana, but on the other hand, that Hana can't be quantified in monetary terms. Mitzvah Slav Lahanis. Therefore, it doesn't work for them to say, for example, that we will give X amount of money as, you know, towards the contribution towards the Sefer Torah, and that'll offset whatever that guy was giving, and then we're disinterested party, because the fact is they're still in shul listening to the Torah. But, for example, if it were, let's say, that the money was going to be used, let's say, for the city walls or other public, other public things like that, then conceivably they could withdraw from it by giving an equivalent amount of money. On the other hand, the Torah and the Beis Yosef talk about that, no. When we say over here a Sefer Torah, we don't mean only a Sefer Torah. We mean any kind of thing that is used for public projects in the city. They can't totally be misalik themselves from it, because the fact of the matter is, they're using the wall, they're using the shul, they're using the whatever it is, unless they were going to pay money for an entire Sefer Torah or an entire wall or what have you, they still have an interest in this guy's money. Yeah. Okay. Toshma. Come, let's bring a proof from yet a third braisa. If, again, the Shiv Merah says, give a money to the poor people of my city. Again, Dayanim from that city can't judge the case, and Adim from that city can't go and testify on the case. Now, before we get to the answer, we have to figure out what the braisa is talking about. The Tisbara. What are you thinking? How do you even understand the braisa? What's the logic? Because the Aniyim are going to be getting this money, therefore the Dayanim should be possible. How are the Dayanim? And again, the Dalai
Bakhlal. They could keep some of the money?
No, the Dayanim are not kidding. No. Shave a little off the top? No. Ela Ema, ain't done in Bedayonim Aniyye Oseir. Vein Mavin Raime Aniyye Oseir. Fine, we have to correct the Braisa and say it doesn't mean Dayanim in general. It means if the Dayanim of the city are among its Aniyim, or if the Adim that you want to call are among the Aniyim of the city, then you can't because they're negev adover.
Right.
again, Ramai, now once we have that understanding, we can ask again, if you're going to say that siluk works, listauk betray nafshayu, again, let two people recuse themselves, say that we're not going to take any of this money that's going to the poor, and then they can judge it. The answer is Hachanami b'sefer Torah. First of all, we could answer that this last brayta is also talking about that the money was supposed to go to a sefer Torah. Ba'amai kori luhu aniyim. So why do we call them in this last brayta poor people? Da'akol eitz a sefer Torah aniyim. Hey, because everybody is considered aniyim relative to a sefer Torah. An oni is a person who needs things. Everybody needs a sefer Torah because everybody needs to be yotzer, kriya, and shul. So therefore, you can well call when the people in town do not have a sefer Torah, they can be called aniyim. Ain't oni yellow b'das. They're lacking the das. The Rashbam says, aniyus godel, there's a tremendous aniyus, but they don't have a sefer Torah. So yes. Or the Ibai Sema, or another way we could explain the answer is La'olam kid katani, aniyim mamish. No, you could answer that the Braisa actually does literally mean that we do mean regular aniyim in the regular sense, that this person pledged a mana that's going to go out of his estate to the aniyim of the city. Are you asking then why, just because the aniyim are collecting, why does that disqualify the dayanim or other members of the community who are not aniyim? The reason is Rania deromu alive. Because we're talking about that these aniyim are the responsibility of the dayanim. In other words, the rich people in town have the responsibility of taking care of these poor people. Well, if the rich people in town, if any of them are the dayanim or any of them are the edim, yeah, of course they have a vested interest. But, however, we have to figure out. No, we didn't. However, before we assume that the dayanim are just members of the community, not poor people, and therefore we ask, so if the aniyim are getting the money, how are the dayanim? So first we answer, we're talking about the sefer Torah. Now we're saying, if there's a connection between the rich people, who among them are the dayanim, and the poor people, namely that the rich people are responsible for the upkeep of the poor people, sure, then a gay abedus. But we have to figure out, what exactly is the scenario? If we're talking about that there's a fixed amount, that they know it's fixed how much each person is assessed every year to give to the aniyim, so then still it's not such a problem. Fine, then let two people of the town, two of these ashirim in town, let them go pay off now the amount that they're assessed for the year, and now they have no interest, really, dino, and then they can judge, because either way, they've already paid off their assessment for the year. Yeah, then they can judge Rabbi Dayanim, as the case may be. Yeah, the answer is, Hachamayaskin and Dolakitzlu. That's what, wait. First of all, Hachamayaskin and Dolakitzlu. First of all, we can answer that we're talking about a case where it's not like that. Whenever they need, whenever there's a need for aniyim, then they start collecting. Well then, in that case, if there's money available right now, there's going to be fewer collections done. Therefore, they're going to give a double. Or the Ibai Sema, La'olam b'kitzlahu, or another possibility is we could answer even, let's say, yes, there is a fixed assessment that the Ashirim are asked to give every year. However, the Nichalahu, nevertheless, they still are Negei B'Dava, they still have an interest in this money going to the poor people of town. The Kivin did Rabach. Because once there's an increase, then there's an increase. Meaning, in other words, if Kitzlahu, basically, like you were saying, from one year to the next, money is fungible. If this year we got an unexpected bequest of a mana, then it means fine. This year already they took care of, they paid their, but next year is still, yeah, so therefore they have an interest in, yeah. And then there's a different explanation.
Like rollover minute.
Yeah. Then there's a different explanation of Kivin de Rabach, which comes with the Me'iri says it more explicitly, the Rambam says it a little less clearly, whatever, but that it means that the Ashirim have a vested interest. Let the Aniyim get this extra money. They can then invest it or whatever, and then they can end up becoming rich and not needing tzedakah at all, and therefore there'll be less tzedakah that has to be collected from us. So therefore, again, they're negev.
They cannot invest it through them. They have
no. But the point is, in other words, once the aniyim have a little extra money, then it's more likely that they'll be able to. They'll climb above the poverty line, and they won't be eligible for tzedakah anymore. And then there'll be less amount assessed. And it's in the interest of that shirim, because now the assessments will be smaller.
People would think like that.
Okay. So that takes care of that. So we've established then that it is possible for shuftim to be aiding one for the other. However, they have to be solace themselves with everything they said, and we have to make sure in all these various ways that there's not any possibility of being of conflict of interest, of being the gay of a dover. Okay. Next, we said Vinasin Shomer Sofa Zelazad. The third thing that Shmuel said is.
Wait, hold on. Yeah. You and I are. He comes and says that the field that we have
belongs to him, or whatever. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So I give you the field.
Mm-hmm.
And now I can be able to testify.
However, no, because we need, first of all, you need to give me the field, and you need to make that declaration and that kinyan. Second of all, you need to accept only one kind of achrayus, but not the other. You need to accept the achrayus that if he, who is your Baal Chayv, comes and takes the field, that you will reimburse me. But not that if he takes the field, he being the one who is Ma'arer, that you're going to reimburse me.
Right.
Only then, only with all of that, does it work.
So I'm losing half of my field that I already bought with you
in
order to help you.
Okay.
Do you pay me back later?
Again,
would that be illegal?
No, I would probably be illegal because it would be negev adaver. But you're doing it in order. You're doing it in order that you won't be loyver rosh of alay shalom. You're doing this in order that your baal chayv, your hoda, will have means to be paid back. However, you're still gonna owe me if he ends up taking it. So therefore, in that case, you want to be made. You want to be made because you want the truth to be established. Fine, very nice. But yes, there's going to be a.
What about if you relinquish with the condition that you can take it back to another?
I don't know. I can't see how that basically allows it.
Oh, you mean this lazy guy is only coming after me, not coming after you too?
Right. No, he's coming. No, lazy is coming after both of us because he claims the whole field belongs to him.
Yeah.
Or even if he claims only part of it belongs to him, whatever. The point of the matter is your share and mine would be smaller. Yeah.
Yeah.
Basically, would not.
They're going to have to ferret out the facts. Yeah. Okay. Then we said v'nasin shomer sachar zelazeh. Next, we said that partners are shomer sachar to each other. If one of them is guarding something that belongs to the partnership, then he's considered a shomer sachar.
Of
the other one. Now, we're not talking about land that they own in partnership, by the way, because we learned in Bava Metzia that a shomer on land doesn't have the regular dinim of shomer. We're talking about shomer on metal. The question is, Amai, why should he be chayev as a shomer? Shmir b'baylam. Isn't it a case of shmir b'baylam? Again, that we learned in Bava Metzia, where if I'm guarding for you, but you're also an employee or whatever of mine, then shomer chinam or shomer sachar, even shoyl, you're potter from everything. So over here, Reuven is watching the thing that we're part of it belongs to Shimon, Reuven is working together with him. They're working in a partnership. So Rapapa says, yes, but we're talking about. Yeah, that's what we're saying. Each one is watching things for the other, yeah. The answer is, Amar Rapapa, to Amalei Shmurli Hayoim Vani Eshmel Achalamachar. Yes, but we're talking about, suppose that he says, you watch the thing for me today, and tomorrow, both my part and yours. And tomorrow, I'll watch it for you. That's not shemir b'baylam. However, they're considered shemir sachar because each one is watching the other person's part, but he also is watching his part. He has the schar that he has. Because not shemir b'baylam, because we learned over there, shemir b'baylam is only if when we agreed that I'm going to watch the thing for you, prior to me starting to watch it, you already were employed by me. I hired you or borrowed you or whatever. And here it's not, because we're saying that I'm watching it today and you're watching, and then I'm watching it today, but you're not employed by me meanwhile, because you're not doing anything for me. Tomorrow you're going to watch it and I'm not. Yeah, so therefore it's not Shemir of Bailam. That's what we're saying. They're Shemir Sachar.
It's really, you cannot be a Shutuk, in other words.
No, you are a Shutuk, but we're saying instead.
You don't have a bar.
Yeah, that's what we're saying. You can't, yeah. Okay. Turn it on. Machalei bayis, machalei sada. We learn in the Braisa, if one person sells to the other one a house or a field, ein meid lo yaleha, he cannot say eidus on it, because the achrayus is on him. Now, usually we figure achrayus means what we always mean, that if it gets taken away, then you're going to have to reimburse it, and therefore it sounds like, in other words, he's negev adaver. However, machale para machale talis, but if he sold him a para or a talis, made loyaleha, then he can say validly edus on it. Because then there's no achrayus. The pashtus, it means there's no achrayus on the talis. The problem with that is maishna resha or maishna sefer. What is the difference between the resha and the sefer? In other words, it's true that usually Kafka has achrayos and Metaltman don't. But then the essential difference isn't between Metaltman and Kafka. The essential difference is achrayos or not. And if I sell you Metaltman and you did accept achrayos, and actually Metaltman, there can very well be achrayos. If I sell you a para and it turns out it wasn't my para, sure, there's going to be achrayos. It was a mekachtos. You wouldn't have bought the para if you didn't know it was my, if you knew it wasn't mine. So therefore, it's a matter of achrayos or not. Why are we distinguishing as though the distinction is between Kafka and Metaltman?
So there could be
achrayus on Metaltman, yeah, because of mekachtos.
In a mekachtos.
Yeah, because, well, that's exactly. If achrayus, in other words, if the para or the talus wouldn't be taken away by my balchoy, fine, because the balchoy can't collect the Metaltman. But it could be taken away by somebody who has a riot, the para was his, and I stole it. And then, of course, I have to reimburse you. You wouldn't have bought the para if you had known that.
So there is.
So there is achrayus in that case. So that's the question. Maishna resho, maishna sefer. So what's the difference between kauka and Metaltman in that place? Amr of Sheshes, Reisha, but Reuven should gozal sodom shimon and machlo the Levi. So Rav Sheshes said we have to construct a bit of a complicated case like this. Reuven stole a field from Shimon, not necessarily that he actually stole it. It means at least that Shimon is claiming that Reuven stole it. So Reuven is claimed to have stolen a field from Shimon, or Machra Levi. Now Shimon turned around, Reuven sold that field to Levi, but also Yehuda v'koma Arer. Yehuda now is coming and raising an objection and saying it wasn't Shimon's rather to begin with, it was mine. Shimon himself had it illegally. Well then, Deloy Lazel Shimon La'asid Leila Levi. Then what we're saying is Shimon is not able to go and give Eidos that it does belong to Levi. In other words, because it does belong to Levi. Because he would rather that it would be able to return. We'll continue tomorrow and we'll start over again, I guess, with this case and figure out the exact details of it. But we're going to see in particular that the word achrayos here means something a little different than it usually does. We'll get into that tomorrow, rather.